Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Thanks for coming back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Tonight, we're going to have a guest, Izzy Kalman, who was gone for a while, but came back last week and talked on the show. We had a great show last Wednesday, and he's going to join us tonight as well, along with myself and Shelley. After our talk last Wednesday, when we talked about how we handle problems in the workplace or at home, when there's two people that are struggling to get along with each other, I mentioned that it has always been my practice to bring both people in my office or in my living room or wherever it was suitable, and kind of let them talk through what their problem was. In many cases, as Izzy has taught us, both people feel victimized. Neither person really feels like they're the perpetrator or the villain or the bully. And I found that myself in what I've done for a long time with my kids, with the kids I took care of, with staff members in my various jobs. Waitresses, in case everybody doesn't know it, are a really tough group of ladies and gentlemen. And they can either be a great team or they can have many, many personality differences which create problems. It's always been my practice to, if I was the boss, and sometimes even when I wasn't the boss, to get them to talk to each other and to work through their problems. And this is not what Izzy is trying to get everybody to do when he says, you know, make a buddy out of a bully, although ultimately that's the nice thing that could happen. He just wants you to take a little bit of the excitement out of being victimized like that and turn it around the other way. And he showed us several different ways to actually do that. However, when we talked about this and I said I had always brought everybody in and I would set one here and one there and say, okay, I'm not going to intervene until I think you need a third party's input, and let people talk it out. And since then, Izzy has advised me that in a lot of cases, in the world of psychiatry, this is not an accepted method. You don't put the victim with the perpetrator in the same room. They don't do that. So we thought we'd talk about that tonight a little bit and maybe try to kind of understand why. I guess there's a good reason if it's really, really a serious condition or scenario, then I guess it makes sense to me. But in everyday life, if somebody's just not getting along with someone else because they have a difference of opinion or perhaps they've listened to other people. I've talked about this quite a bit on the show, the fact that in many cases people are listening to other people and that stirs up some drama. I had my 16-year-old granddaughter tell me this week that she's stopped going to any of the school parties. And I said, why? And she says, too much drama, Graham. I can't take it. Too much drama, especially if the kids are still in middle school. Now, she's in high school. But because she's grown up in that neighborhood, she has younger friends, and they invite her to the parties. She's a very friendly and a very good-looking young girl. And so she gets invited a lot. She says, I won't go because the drama is just too much for me. And I said, what do you mean by drama? And she said, you know, he say, she say, they said, and everybody's mad at this one or everybody's mad at that one. And I said, oh, yeah, I can remember that myself. Especially in, like, eighth grade, for some reason, I remember there being a lot of drama like that. So I guess the point is I'd like to understand fully from Izzy why in the world of psychiatry they don't believe that that would help heal or mend any kind of relationship. They certainly do couples therapy, but I guess that would be considered different because a couple has committed to each other. And two kids in school or two kids or two people in a workplace or something, there's no commitment to each other, so it makes it a different scenario. So I'm going to bring Shelly in. I'm not sure if that's Izzy on the line because I don't have his phone number memorized, but Izzy, your button isn't on to tell me you want to talk, so if that's you, please push the button that tells you you want to come in. And I'm going to bring in Shelly right now. Hi, Shell.
Hey, Rainey.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, it's a good show
good.
Tonight. Sounds like, you know, I like what you guys are going to be talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I guess part of it makes sense to me, but part of it doesn't make sense to me. So when Izzy left me that message last week, I thought, oh, yeah, I'd really like to know what the reasoning is behind that and why that is not the acceptable way to do things. It just it kind of shocked me a little bit.
I can see in certain scenarios where where the act that was perpetrated was so egregious that the victim would be traumatized by being placed in front of the perpetrator again. But I think that's the exception to the rule. I think it's a very small percentage of the wrongs that people see psychiatrists for. I think a lot of times people will go to psychiatrists feeling emotionally injured when they really weren't, when it was their perspective, when they didn't understand where somebody was coming from and they made it something that it actually wasn't. Where if they had spoken to the person, it might never have blossomed into this thing that injured them so much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I used to talk about that as past that I taught the health educators when we were in Hippocrates. That was one of the things I talked about, is not allowing emotional hurts to fester because of that reason, because they end up getting a life of their own, they grow into something that they didn't start out with, and over time they get magnified. It doesn't improve over time, it actually gets worse over time. And then you end up drawing other people into the drama, as you were saying, and then it becomes sides, you know, this person against that person, and it really snowballs over weeks, months, and sometimes even years into something that started as a misunderstanding, or that started as somebody just simply having a bad day and saying something out of turn, and they would have taken it back if they had ever realized that it impacted the other person the way it did. And I've seen a lot of these scenarios where people are mad at each other for a long time. And when they do finally talk, they each have a completely different perspective on the incident that tore them apart to begin with.
Well, and see, that's the way I've always felt, and that's the way I think about it, is the fact that I believe in a lot of cases talking just for a few minutes is going to make the difference. You and I have seen it work many, 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 many times. Many times. And
right.
I've certainly seen it work with young people a lot. You know, I mean, I have a house full of teenagers. And every now and then they'll get in a cranky place or a place of feeling like they're sharing too much of their space with someone else. And there'll be a little altercation. And what works for my grandchildren, of course, this is me and my Irish guilt thing. I look at them and say, oh, you don't love him? And they always, Grandma, well, of course I do. And I'm like, oh, you do love him. So why are you talking to him like that? So it works great for them. I realize that's not something I could probably do in the outside world, although there's been a couple times when I've done exactly that, even with people that are working with me. So there's Izzy. I'm going to bring him in, so maybe he can help us with this and help us figure out the reasoning behind that. Hi, Izzy.
Hi, Renee. Also, hi, Shelley.
Hi, Izzy.
By the way, I've been on the line all along, but I called from my office number, and apparently you didn't recognize it.
It didn't come on telling me that you wanted me to bring you in. I pressed
the one, which I'm supposed to do to talk to the host.
Yeah.
I did it numerous times, and I think the system wasn't working well. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, good. Good, good, good. I wondered what the other number was because I see it's gone now. So okay, so you've heard me, and I've kind of introduced the message you had left me, and I'm so interested to find out what the reasoning is behind that, because as I said, I've used it easily 1,000 times, and I always have really good results with it. But I guess, like Shelley said, there may be some reasons behind it. So we'd like to have you talk about that.
One word of clarification. You said that psychiatry says that it's wrong to do this. It's not psychiatry. You know, psychiatry is a specialty of medicine that deals with the mind. And today, psychiatrists deal mostly with medication. Some of them do some therapy, but it's mostly medication. And it's not even psychology that's saying it's wrong. It's specifically the anti-bullying experts who teach this. Specifically the field of bullying, not any other area of psychology. The bullying psychology is really more a political movement than it is a scientific movement. It's based on the idea that there are imbalances of power, and if you're dealing with somebody who has more power than you, you shouldn't have to deal with them because it's not fair. They're too powerful. You know, you can't deal with somebody more powerful. So they say you should never put the victim in with the bully because the bully, there's an imbalance of power and they can't deal with somebody who has more power. But that's nonsense. Does that mean that a child is not supposed to talk to their parent if they have a problem with them? If I have a problem with my boss, I'm not supposed to deal with them because they're more powerful? It's nonsense. It's about time the world realized that the bullying experts, and I'm talking about the really famous ones that have created this field, don't know how to solve the problem of bullying. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to do it, so they come up with all kinds of very complex procedures. Everybody has to protect the victim because they don't know how to solve the problem.
Well, I think that's because they're not solving it. I mean, you know, it's their way out because they haven't made a difference. If anything, it's become worse and mm-hmm. according to everything I read, epidemic. I do believe that it's been with us forever, ever, 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 ever. I don't believe this is something new. And I also don't believe that it's the actual act of bullying or picking on somebody just for the hell of picking on them, I think has been around forever and is probably just as active or not any more active than it was 50 years ago. What is more pronounced today is the act of violence. And you've been very clear with us on that as to making the differentials of what's a crime versus what is an act of bullying. And one requires the police and one shouldn't. I do think those things are at a much higher level than they ever were before.
Right.
Kids walking
right.
in with guns and all that kind of stuff, absolutely. But just bullying, I don't think it is. I mean, you hear stories about, remember when they had inkwells in desks and boys would stick the girls' ponytails in the inkwell, and that was supposed to be flirtatious and cute.
It was flirtatious. Now, I never got to do that for two reasons. I went to an elementary school that had those desks. But we already were done with inkwells, and we were using ballpoint pens. And secondly, I went to an all-boys school, so I never had the opportunity to dunk a girl's hair into an inkwell.
Otherwise, I'm sure you would have participated, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Well, and you see, but that's if a boy did that to you, then you went home and you told your mother, and your mother said, "Oh, he likes you." Right? I mean, that was the way you handled it. Oh, he likes you. They wouldn't pick on you if they didn't like you. And you said that about other boys with boys and other girls with girls. Or the other famous line was, they're jealous of you. They're jealous of you. But it definitely
It's a nice way that parents use to help their children deal with the unpleasant circumstances of life.
Yes.
Just tell yourself they're jealous, they like you, so it's easier to handle it. You see it in a positive way rather than a negative way.
So tell us about, are you talking about that one guy that you mentioned the other day? I don't know why I can never remember his name. The one that you talked about the other day that talked about being trained more about the bullying. He's got a special program. He was the first one I ever learned about when I started doing this.
Olveus, O-L-W-E-U-S?
Yeah.
Now, I want to make it clear, Olveus is not a bad person. He has wonderful intentions. You know, he was very concerned about victims of bullying, and because he realized they're taking their own lives. And he's a good researcher. He did a tremendous amount of work. But he came up with a program that's based on what he thinks would work, but it's not working. And if you understand psychology well, you realize why it's not working. But because he's a researcher, today everybody thinks that a researcher knows the absolute truth. No, they know how to do an experiment and how to do statistics. That's what they know how to do. They're not privy to the truth about life.
Right.
Just because they're a researcher.
Right. Well, and I've found, because I do that every day for this show. I research and I find numbers and I find statistics, and I can find anywhere from 3 to 8 different set of stats for the same things for the same years. So I realize that depending on where they do the survey or the research and who they talk to and all this kind of stuff, you know, you're always going to get different statistics. I do it just to get people to understand that things are at an epidemic level, or like the night I talked about the women CEOs versus male CEOs and all that. That rang pretty much true in everything I read. There were differences in the amounts of money, but nonetheless, there was a big jump between a man and a woman's amount of pay and all that kind of stuff. So I realized that there's all kinds of information out there. But do you ever watch The Family Feud? Have either one of you ever watched that show?
I think there was a version of it a few decades ago. If there was, then I watched it. But I haven't watched the newer shows.
Well, it tickles me because they survey 100 men for certain questions, or 100 women, or just 100 people. And they say that when they ask the question. And they ask you to think of what you would put in that place. And so often what the answers are up on the board are, like, ridiculous. You wonder who in the hell they surveyed. But it just shows you, you know, it just shows you how different people are. So, you know, they take a survey about one thing in West Virginia and take a survey about something else in Florida, and they're going to get, you know, 10 totally different, even if they're all the same age, even if they're all men or vice versa, all women in the same age, the answers are always always very, very different, and you have to wonder, oh, my God, what were they thinking? But it shows me when I watch it how differently we all think and what our surroundings and our atmosphere and our lives, how that governs how we think about everything.
Yeah. By the way, when it comes to the research on the popular anti-bullying programs, they're so consistently that they don't work. At best, they produce a minor reduction in bullying, and they often result in an increase in bullying. Whenever you have a large-scale, well-done study, it's showing these programs hardly have any benefits. So it's not that one study will show a big improvement, another study will show no improvement. The really good studies that are conducted by the even by the researchers who are promoting these programs, they're finding the programs don't work, but they don't want to admit it. What they do is they spin it to make it sound better than it really is, because there's money involved. You have to realize when you're making money from something, it's very hard to be objective about the results of your studies.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I guess that's true about everything, but I don't know how anybody could say that anything is working at this particular point in time, to be honest with you. I mean, because it still exists in especially every middle school. It's maybe better in high school because kids grow away from it and find their friends, and they get very cliquified, if you will, and there's not that much bullying going on. But in middle school, when they're still trying to find themselves, it's still rampant. And every school here in our vicinity, they do things. I mean, they post that they do things. But I think I mentioned on the show last year, my grandson comes home. He says, "Graham, I got to have a pink shirt." He's in eighth grade. "Got to have a pink shirt. It's anti-bully day." I said, "So you're wearing pink?" You know, and I said, "Doesn't that get you guys bullied a little bit by each other if you all got pink shirts on?" And he just laughed at me, and he says, "I don't know. I have never worn a pink shirt, so we'll have to see." So they go to school. I call the principal, ask if I can come talk, and they said not until the county school supervisor okays for me to come and talk to everybody, even though I'm a grandparent of one of the students. I can't. I said, "Okay, never mind." I said, "I just thought I might be able to help or answer questions or at least listen to the kids if they have something to say." "No, you can't, Mrs. Brewer, but that's really sweet of you to offer." And that night, Austin gets home from school, and I said, "What'd you do for bully day?" And he said, "Wore pink shirts." And I said, "What else? Was there like something in the cafeteria or something in the theater or something?" "No, that's how we did, was wear pink shirts, Graham." So, I mean, that's just for show. That means nothing else.
Yeah, the schools are doing things, but it doesn't mean what they're doing is having any real benefit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
you know. In fact, a lot of what the schools are doing are making the problem worse. But they think they're doing the right thing, so they keep on doing it. When it's not working, they think they have to do it more intensively. But another thing that happens is, often when what they're doing makes the problem worse, they end up having to spend a lot of time dealing with bullying complaints. So they think, "Wow, we're doing something about bullying. We're spending so much time on it." But they don't realize that what they're doing is causing them to spend a lot of time on it because it makes the problem worse. I just posted on my Psychology Today blog a very long article about sibling rivalry. Because a month ago, a new study has come out on, they call it sibling bullying. And the researchers discovered something that really everybody knows. They discovered that bullying among siblings at home is even worse than among kids in school. A big revelation. Anybody who has kids, you know, probably has them fighting all the time.
Wow.
Well, I did a show about that about a month and a half ago. I did a show about sibling rivalry and about how tough it is and how the child that is the underdog, so to speak, carries that with them their whole life. There was a horrific story about some sisters that took their youngest sister and taped her eyelashes to the top of her eyes. So she had to sit in the sun all day.
Yeah. That's a story that's become very famous. It's been repeated over and over again. So everybody thinks that sibling rivalry is so cruel. Sometimes it is, but I'm sure that the girl who taped her sister's eyelids didn't have any idea what was going to happen. And I guarantee you that the sister really is feeling unbelievable guilt her whole life for what she did. She had no intention of blinding her sister. She just didn't know what was going to happen from it. So I think the sister who did it is suffering at least as much as the sister who got blinded. But what happens is, now people want to sensationalize a story, so they take these horrific acts and they put it in the beginning of the story about the research to get everybody gung-ho against sibling bullying. But the reason I brought up sibling bullying is, or sibling rivalry, the reason it's such a common problem is because the parents are trying to make it stop. The parents are trying very hard to get the children to stop fighting with each other. What the parents don't realize, they're making the kids fight with each other. So the parents are busy all the time making the kids, sibling rivalry stop. No, they're making it happen.
Well, I think, I don't know if that's true to all families. I think what you're explaining to us is it's compounded because of all of the attention it's getting. Is that what you're saying?
You're right. It's not in every family, but I would say in approximately 90% of families where the kids are fighting all the time, it's because of what the parents are doing to make it stop. If the parents didn't do what they were doing, there would be much less fighting among the kids. But the reason the anti-bullying programs are not working is because the recommendations of the bullying experts are for the parents, it's for the schools to do the very same thing that parents are doing that's making the children fight all the time.
I think the reason Rainey's reacting to that is because she always steps in. But most parents, Rainey, don't do what you do. They don't hear both sides. They would just react to whoever is standing in front of them, complaining or whatever. They don't bother hearing the full story. So, so in that regard, Izzy's right. So what the parents are doing, because they will take one side over another, they don't hear the full story, they don't try to find out why the kid was so pissed off to begin with that he punched the other one or whatever, they just say, okay, because that act of punching him is awful, you're grounded, he gets punished, he doesn't realize what the kid did to him 2 minutes earlier that got him so mad that he punched him, So so the one that kind of provoked maybe this, what's being tagged as bullying behavior, goes without any kind of consequence, even though, you should punch someone. The bottom line is the other guy wasn't either, and that's how parents can complicate the issue because they don't bother trying to get them to work with each other. Now the other kid's even angrier than he was when he punched him. So it actually compounded the problem. It didn't make things better, That's not how you handle it. So that's why you're reacting. But you don't handle it like that. But most parents do, unfortunately.
Well, we just had that here.
Shelley is right. If you handle the kids correctly, what you do, Renee, with kids is you don't play judge between them. If you play judge, each one fights to get you on their side so that you'll say they're right, the other one is wrong, and the other one will get punished. What you do is you teach them how to deal with each other directly.
Right. And that's
a good thing.
I know when I was a kid, I think I've told you, I know Shelley knows this story, and I think I've shared this with you. Barbara and I, my sister and I, are 19 months apart. And if she tattled on me or came complaining about me to my mother, I got a nickel. If I went to my mother and complained about Barbara, Barbara got a nickel.
That's a very good policy.
She stopped it because we'd be so angry with the other one when we wanted to tattle on him. We didn't want him to get a damn nickel.
But the bullying experts are telling kids they have to tattle. You have to tell an adult.
And the
adult has to figure out who the bully is. And you can't, and you have to punish the bully or reform the bully. You can't put the victim together with the bully.
For me,
you've been doing exactly the opposite. What you do works. but the world's most revered bullying experts who work in the universities and get journal articles published, they do the opposite of what you do, which is why their programs don't work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I still believe that a kid needs to be able to talk to somebody, but
sure.
Again, they need to know. They need to know that when they do talk, I mean, in my house, they know you better be telling me the truth. This better be the true facts, and then because I'm going to call in your sister or your brother or the next door neighbor or whoever it is, and I'm going to say, now you tell me your side of the story, because that's what I do, because there's your truth, my truth, and the real truth every time. But I get what you're saying about them making these things, these little tiny snowballs into gargantuan messes. I get that totally, and I got that from the very beginning. But I also think in my heart that instead of saying, don't tell a teacher, don't tell your parent, don't try to handle this yourself unless it gets out of hand, instead of doing that, I still believe that some of these people need to be trained better. They need maybe write down a list of what they should do. I mean, maybe people are so ridiculously brainwashed about how the bad guy gets punished and the good guy gets away, or whatever the scenario is. Maybe we need to write down a list. You know, when somebody comes to you and says this happened, you know, you have to find out exactly what happened from both sides and witnesses and all of the above. I mean, that's what our court system is supposed to do, and that's kind of a joke anymore as well. So I don't know.
By the way, this is what I believe adults should tell kids, but adults can only do this if they actually know how to help. It's fine. The kids should know they have somebody to talk to, but what you should instruct the kids is, if other kids are making you miserable, if they're giving you a hard time, come and talk to me. I'll teach you how to deal with them. Or I'll send you to this counselor. The counselor will teach you how to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having trouble, you deserve to be taught how to deal with it. So come to me. Mm-hmm. I'll teach you how to deal with it. But I'm not going to look to punish the other kid. I'm not going to look to be a judge. I will teach you how to handle a situation.
Mm-hmm. And this is a scenario where it's true bullying, not an act of violence or harm or any of those things.
Yeah,
I think that's another
place
where
people break your bones. Yeah, if another kid smashed your nose and you had to go to the hospital, that kid should get punished in some way. But the thing is, even punishments have to be done well or they won't be effective. A punishment, for one thing, that for a punishment to be effective, it has to make restitution to the victim. If the person who did something bad doesn't make restitution, it's not an effective punishment.
Mm-hmm.
If I broke your nose, I should pay your medical expenses, I should pay you for your pain, I should pay you for any lost income you had. There has to be appropriate restitution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It makes sense. Yeah, Izzy said that to us before, and of course that does make perfect sense. But then, you know, what's happening, the way it's being handled now, is people that don't have anything to do with being the one that's been injured or that deserves some kind of restitution. Other people like lawyers and people like that are getting all the restitution instead of the person that deserves it because they're involving all
the
other people. Yes, I get that. And I think, well, you know, we're still in the middle of all this with my grandson, and I'll tell you, I feel bad for everybody when I can finally talk. Probably worse for myself because I'll probably get myself hung someplace, but it's for me, it's kind of like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? But even the fact that they refer to what happened to my grandson as bullying, we've already, you know, shown the difference between that and actual bullying. That wasn't bullying. So I don't know. I think there's so much confusion. Izzy, when you... I know that I've read almost all of your stuff, and I've watched the video, the workplace video, and I've read a lot of the things on your site and everything. If you get invited to a school, what do you do first? Do you first like have a big like have all the kids come into the auditorium and you talk to them about this, or do you do things on a more personal level with just kids that this involve? How do they help you get organized in a school if they invite you in?
It depends on the school schedule, and I prefer, if I have my way, I want to do an assembly for students, or sometimes several, different age groups, two or three ages apart. I'll have them grouped together. I want to spend a couple of hours with the school staff. And if there are serious victims of bullying and I have more time, I want to work with them individually. So sometimes I'll have a small group with the kids who are the most serious victims of bullying, and I'll teach them what to do. But I also do it with the counselor with me, because I want the counselor to see what I do, and I would like the counselor to learn my methods also. Because if I come in one day to a school, how do I know that there's going to be any continuation? The school needs somebody who knows my methods. So it's also very worthwhile that at least one person in the school knows my methods and how to use them, so then they continue what I do when I'm not there anymore. Sometimes I'll do the students first, sometimes I'll do the staff afterwards. It depends on the school schedule. I prefer to do the student assembly first with the staff present, because that'll save me time. I want the staff to see what I'm teaching the kids. Because if I meet with the staff first, they haven't seen what I teach the kids, so I have to have a longer presentation for the staff. But if they've already seen what I teach the kids, then I need less time with the staff afterwards.
So in essence, you're doing what I just said needs to be done. You're training the people that are in charge so that they know how to handle things, so that the kids are not left with all the responsibility of knowing how to handle everything. Once the adults get it, then they have the right kind of guidance and the right kind of leadership. That's what I'm looking for. I believe that we so need better leaders. I mean, in every aspect. And I watched the procession this week with the new Pope, and everybody's panicking because he's got his window down and his arm out. He's the Pope, for God's sakes. He's supposed to be able to touch these people. These people live to see him and be near him and in his presence. And all these people are panicking, and I'm like, you're going to make something happen.
Yeah. From what I see or have read so far about the new Pope, he's an amazing human being.
Yes. And they interviewed this young girl, and she said being that close to the Pope, I've never been that close. She might have been 13 or 14 years old. She said, it's like being next to Jesus. And I thought to myself, that's beautiful. That's really, really beautiful.
Yeah.
And it brings back some strength to an otherwise very tumultuous world that we live in. I thought it was beautiful. And I hope they quit advertising that, the Pope could be unsafe and stuff like that, because they're just going to make something bad happen by saying that every 10 minutes. So, I think it's wonderful. So, do you get school? You know what I'm thinking? I'm not going to say the name of the school on the radio show, but there's a school not here in West Palm, but close by, that has had a lot of stuff happen. They so could use some help. I'm going to see if I can.
Can I suggest something?
Yep.
Can I suggest? Probably the cheapest way to get a school to use my teachings is by having the school staff take my online course. I have an online course called Bullying, the Golden Rule Solution. It's for teachers. It takes about 5 hours to complete the course. The cost for per teacher is $39. However,
okay.
I did it in conjunction with a company that sells these courses to schools. The company that sells the course can make very good deals for a school so that it doesn't come out $39 per teacher. It can come out a fraction of that. If there's a large staff, they'll give them a very good price, and all of the staff can take this course, and I guarantee you the school will not be the same afterwards.
Wow.
Well,
I like
this school is under immense criticism because of all the things that have taken place there through the years. And I don't know if I know anybody there anymore, but I'm going to find out if I do. And I'm going to make that suggestion, and maybe we could get a ball rolling here in South Florida that would really make a difference, because it's not the epidemic that you read about in the papers every day, although some of those things have happened here. But it is bad enough so that kids don't go to school. It is bad enough so that kids skip school and so that kids don't get any good out of being there when they are there, because they're too worried about what's going to happen next. So
have things gotten worse in the school in recent years?
I can go as far back as like 28 years ago when this particular school started having so many problems, and it has gotten worse. And from what I don't have any kids that go there anymore, any grandchildren or anybody, but the rumors that I'm hearing are not good. So I would say that they need a lot of help. And, of course, then some of the schools that one of the ladies that talks on our show, her name is Linda, and she writes the books and stuff, and she goes to some schools that are elementary schools that are kind of scary as well. So I'll get – is that on your regular site, Izzy?
If you go to resources – yeah, I have to tell you that my website is being rebuilt. And it's kind of, if you go to the home page, you'll see it says that it's being recreated. So it'll be up hopefully by early next week.
Okay.
But there's a tab that says resources, and one of the things in the menu of the resources is the course for teachers. There are also links to it in other places. But you can always email me. I'll send you a link to it. Or you can go to it directly. The company is called Professional Learning Board. Professional Learning Board. And if you go to their website, you'll look up the courses and you'll find my course that's called Bullying, the Golden Rule Solution.
Okay.
And also, if anybody in the school wants to look at the course, I can give them access to the course for free. They'll look at it. If they like it, then they can, you know, decide to buy it for the school. If they don't like it, okay, they didn't lose anything. But I can give them free access to look at the course to see if they like the content.
Okay. I'm going to see hopefully the only way I'll get in if there's somebody that either knows me from before or somebody who knows somebody else, because that's really the only way you can get into these things. So I'm going to try to do that, because if we could start something like that here, maybe it would start having a little bit of a domino effect in this vicinity, because there are some places that have serious issues. And like I said, the biggest issue is it means the kids don't go to school. And I'm not hearing, there's nothing on the front page that says, you know, this kid got his nose broke or this happened or that happened. A few years ago, that's what happened. But now what I'm picking up on is that they just don't go. And ultimately, that damages them more than the punch in the nose, right?
Now, if the school that you have in mind, does the student body come from a lower socioeconomic level?
Yes.
They come
from.
Okay,
yeah.
School's not
all
there.
Of
going
them.
To, you're going,
mm-hmm.
Not all of them, but most of the kids come from poor neighborhoods
yeah.
that are crime-ridden. Okay, so
well, they're not that. It's not that bad. It's not that bad, but it's not great either.
Okay, so schools in neighborhoods like that are going to have more serious problems than schools in neighborhoods where the parents make a good living and they're educated and they don't have rampant crime in the neighborhood. You have mm-hmm. to take that into account. Where the neighborhood where the school serves.
Right. Well, I would say this is lower mid class. I wouldn't say that it's that terrible, and I would say that they're working people. They're not indigent. They're hardworking people where everybody works. And but the point is,
they're not neighborhoods that are. Where that are controlled by gangs, and where afraid to walk out in the street and things like that.
No, it's not like
that.
The school
should be able to solve its problems. Now, are people saying about the school that there's a bullying going on, and the school isn't doing anything to make it stop?
Well, the school officials have been under some ridicule and nothing that has stuck and nothing that has amounted to anything, but there has been innuendos and that in the papers and everything.
The only reason I ask is that many schools are accused of doing nothing about bullying, but it's not true. The schools are doing what they're being told to do. What they're being told to do doesn't work and often makes the situation worse. It's the same thing with sibling rivalry. What causes a lot of sibling rivalry is when the parents, pay attention to the fighting. There's a saying in parenting that's really very wise. If you pay attention to negative behavior, you get more negative behavior. Whatever you pay attention to, you're going to get more of. So at home, if the parents are paying attention to all of the fighting, they're going to get more fighting because they're paying attention to it. And here we are for the last 14 years since Columbine, we're raising awareness of bullying. And we have a whole bullying awareness month every October. So the schools are paying more attention to the bullying, to the negative behavior, and then they wonder why they get more bullying.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to pay attention to a problem. If you're paying attention to a problem, but then you do the wrong thing about it, you're going to make the problem worse.
Right.
So all of this business of raising bullying awareness is worthless or even damaging unless you know the right thing to do about the bullying. If you don't know the right thing to do about bullying, you're better off not doing anything because otherwise it'll make it worse.
I know, but we both know that there are people who don't even, they can't even think like that. They make the assumption if they've been doing it for 20 years, then it's the way to do it. And that's why I'm saying if maybe I could just get in the door and say, could you give this a shot, especially if they can look at the site and see if they can get something from it just by doing that and then take it on, that would be awesome. Because, like I said, it's one of the only neighborhood schools in that vicinity, and it takes a lot of kids. So, there's a middle school, and then there's the high school. And the high school doesn't have as many problems. Like I say, that's what I'm finding in most cases anyway. Well, like my granddaughter said to me, she's in high school now, and she said she's been in trouble in school. She's got way too much of her grandmother in her. And if somebody says, she swings around and says, excuse me, she doesn't tolerate any kind of meanness to her friends or anything like that. She's the one who two girls jumped her, and they had it all on camera and saw one girl hand her books to the other girl,
and then grab my granddaughter's hair and pull her over backwards. My granddaughter sat on her, and my granddaughter got suspended for 10 days as well as the girl. And all of it was on camera, and I was very upset. I said, if the two of you got into it, fisticuffs, you know, exchanging blows or something like that, I can see that. But for you to protect yourself and them not have to take your word for it, being able to see it on the camera, there's something wrong with that. So in a lot of cases, that's one of our other problems, is if a kid does fight back, if it is a physical altercation and the kid fights back, they're suspended as well.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah, the schools don't know how to deal with it, so they just make a blanket. If you're involved, you get suspended, and they hope if they just suspend everybody, kids are going to stop getting into fights. But it doesn't work. It makes them more angry at each other, and it makes them want to get even with each other. It sets up the next fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it sends the wrong message to both the one who was doing the bullying and then the one that tried to protect himself. It sends the wrong message to both sides.
Right, right.
Well, and I think at the end of the day, if you make it seem like it's got everybody's attention, sometimes that entices kids to do more because they're actually looking for any kind of attention, no matter where they get it from. I've met women who will tolerate living with an abusive guy years because they'll take the attention any way they can get it. And in some kids are the same way.
Yes. Now, in the beginning of the program, you were talking about drama.
Yes.
And so your granddaughter tries to avoid the drama. But why does drama happen? Why is there drama in the first place? I'll put it in a very simple way. I want to ask two questions. Would you rather live... and also Shelby, would you rather live a safe life or a dangerous life?
Safe life.
Okay. If you have a choice between living a boring life and an exciting life, which would you rather live?
No, exciting.
Almost everybody says they want a safe life, and almost everybody says they want an exciting life. Guess what? They don't go together.
Yeah.
All exciting activities have some measure of danger to them. You know, safety is boring. People want drama. It makes life exciting. You know, we spend today, instead of having real-life dramas, we watch it on TV. But people don't just want to watch TV. They want to experience drama. They want to experience life, relationships, conflicts. It's exciting. Children want it. They go to school. They want drama. They don't just want to go to school and read and do math and science and homework and everything the teachers tell them to. That's boring, to sit in a class all day long and to listen to the teachers. They're much more interested in their fellow students, in their lives. They want relationships. They want conflicts. They want drama. It's not bad. It's normal. They want real life. It's the parents who want complete safety for the children. Children don't want it. They want drama.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're right. I agree with that totally. I do think, I don't know. I think in some cases, you want excitement.
I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. I mean, I think that there are some kids that like the drama because they feel like they're important, all right? You know, they're bringing a rumor into a group, and now all of a sudden, because they're the one that brought this piece of information in, they've gotten everybody's attention. But I do know that there are a lot of kids, because this is how I was when I was a kid, all right? I didn't like the drama either, but I liked the excitement. I had a very exciting childhood, very active, very involved with things. I had a lot of friends. I wasn't popular. I had a lot of individual friends, like friends from this group, friends from, I had one person I liked from this group, one person I liked from that group, that kind of thing. So I lived, I had a very exciting childhood, and yet I did not, I couldn't tolerate the drama. That was one of my issues when I was a kid growing up. I couldn't stand it. And both my nieces are like that. They don't like the drama.
Yeah.
You know, they're very intolerant.
Drama and danger is not pleasant if you don't know how to deal with it successfully. Like, you wouldn't want to skydive if you didn't know how to do it safely. You
right,
want to do it
right.
safely. There's some danger involved, but you want to know how to handle it. Mountain climbing is exciting, but it's not exciting if you have no equipment and you have no lessons. You know, you're going to be terrified. It's the same thing
right.
with interpersonal relationships. If you know how to deal with it successfully, then the interactions are exciting. I have a very good friend who's a very smart and educated person, and he is involved in, what do you call it, when wives, they have these clubs where husbands and wives get together and they have their sex clubs.
Oh, yeah.
In every case, you know, the husbands and wives or the boys and girlfriend willingly go to these things. But
wow.
there's a lot of there are a lot of dramas going on, a lot of dramas go on, and some people don't handle it well. They get jealous, they become angry. But my friend goes there not only for the sex. The sex is exciting, but he likes the drama, and he handles it beautifully. For him, it's like an exciting thing. You go to these things where you're interacting with people, and it's like a game that he plays beautifully. It's exciting. He plays, and he stays out of trouble. You can get into trouble into these things. You can have your career ruined, for instance, if word gets out to your the professional community that you're involved in this. So there's the secrecy involved, the danger involved, but he handles it beautifully. It's exciting. Most people
wow.
would not be able to handle such excitement. It's too dangerous. It's too tough.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you're right. There's a lot of people that are involved in things like that. There's a lot of people. Well, Bonnie and Clyde. There's a whole bunch of stories in our history about people that just started doing something like that just because they thrived on the danger and the.
Yeah, you just talking about movies. Have you seen The Hurt Locker?
You know, somebody, one of my guests at Hippocrates wanted me to see that so badly, and I have yet to watch it.
It's an excellent movie. I won't spoil it for you, so I won't tell you what happens. Otherwise, I'll spoil it. But it's about, you know, you'll see it's about enjoying the drama, the danger.
Yeah.
See, I'm not.
Very powerful movie.
Body. I don't. None of that stuff really appeals to me. I like to make sure everybody is where they're supposed to be and everything is kind. And, I guess I'm kind of a Pollyanna, I guess, because I like to do fun, but I don't want to do anything that I could lose my life doing.
I don't either. I try to play it safe. But I travel a lot, and I fly on airplanes, and a week goes by before there's some new story about a plane accident. Now, I know that statistically you're safer flying than driving. And it's true.
Right.
I once had an accident. I drive a lot, and once I had an accident, and I'm
mm-hmm.
lucky I came out alive.
Right.
Shelby, do you watch movies?
Well, yeah, of course I do.
Okay, what movies do you like?
I like science fiction. I like comedies. I like romantic movies. You know, like chick flicks.
Okay. In the science fiction movies, are any dangerous and bad things happening?
Yeah, I like the action science fiction movies, like the Star Trek movies and.
But it's action. These people are in great danger. They're doing incredibly dangerous things. But even in the chick flicks, is everybody always being nice to each other?
Oh, no. No,
there's always drama. There are bad things. There are bad guys. There are jealousies. People are doing bad things. So the reason what entertainment does for us is our regular lives are kind of boring because they're very safe. But safety isn't fun. So we watch movies and we forget our real lives and we get involved in these movies in which our brains are experiencing these dangerous things without being in danger. That's why so much of, in fact, almost all entertainment has dangerous things going on. Even chick flicks, even comedy, people falling miserable, bad things are happening to them. So we don't want the danger in real life, but we want to experience it in entertainment.
I watch movies to learn how to do it in real life. Kids, we're out of time. We're out of time, so we have to say goodbye. But I agree with this, and I do believe that we are. I mean, you know, I still watch a soap opera that I've been watching since I was like 14, and that's what that's all about too. But it makes me laugh, you know. Okay, so same time next week, Izzy.
Very good. And I have my website, BelieftoBuddies.com, will be running normally and updated.
Good.
We're revising. The site will be better than ever.
Wonderful.
Very
wonderful.
Good.
And, you know, you should put on the website that you talk on the show every Wednesday night and give the Blog Talk Radio address and the phone number in case any of your people would like to call in that way.
That's a neat idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thanks both of you guys and everybody. If anybody's left out there, this is Renee saying good night and God bless. Good night, you guys.
Good night, Renee. Good night, Shelley.
Good night, Izzy.